This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We don't talk fantasy very often on the show. Kevin and I, of course, big daily gamblers. Don't do a lot of fantasy football, but when we do, we only provide you with the best. It is the Kevin Sheehan Show. Dentonay sitting in for Kevin on the team at 980. And with that said, we're going to welcome on my guy, Justin Fensterman of FantasyGuru.com and SiriusXM NFL or SiriusXM Fantasy. Justin, first and foremost, man, appreciate you jumping on. Been a fan of yours for a long time, so I'm really excited for this conversation. How are you, my friend? Everything well? The offseason going well?
Yeah, Denton, it's great to be on. It's a great time with fantasy now. Drafts really kick it into high gear. It's been kind of best ball season for the last couple of months, but this is where it gets exciting. Training camp's in full form right now, so it's an awesome time to just grab your popcorn and get ready for the 2024 season, man. It's great being with you.
When is the earliest that you have ever had a fantasy draft? Do you ever get it into the month of July, or does it only start for you when once August is on the calendar?
For my redraft leagues, for the most part, I would say it is in August and September. I try to keep it as close to that first week of September as humanly possible. But when it comes to best ball drafts, I've had one in May, I've had one in June, a couple in July. So I feel like I've been drafted the last few months.
What is the difference for those of us that do not are not aware? What's the difference between best ball and just your regular fantasy?
Sure. So best ball is kind of like the on steroids version of a mock draft where you're actually playing out the league. But when you draft the league, it gives you the best of the positions from a scoring standpoint. So your highest scoring couple of running backs in a week will get your high scores, and those scores will count, meaning you don't have to set your lineups in best ball. It's kind of like you set it and forget it. You draft, and then you kind of just wait it out week by week, and that's it. That's why rosters are a little bit deeper, and you want to look to draft backups and handcuffs. But yeah, with best ball, unlike redraft leagues, you don't have to set your lineups every week. They'll just take the highest scores per position of your players.
So how does that impact your philosophy when it comes to building a roster when you have obviously a best ball team and just a regular fantasy team?
Absolutely. So it makes me want to go more aggressively when it comes to, like I said, handcuffing. Instead of investing in, let's say, a running back, I want to invest in a run game. I want to get all the possible running backs that could be in line in case an injury happens to the starter, the listed starter. Same with quarterbacks as well. You want to be able to have a couple of quarterbacks to prevent against injury. That way you're not getting even just 5 to 7 points or even a zero at that position. So that's where, unlike redraft leagues, in one quarterback leagues where I'm just looking for one quarterback, that's it, not really looking to draft a backup. In best ball drafts, I'm looking to draft 2 or 3 just to protect myself against those injuries because, again, we have no access to our rosters once the draft is over.
Justin Fensterman, my guest here at FantasyGuru.com and SiriusXM Fantasy Sports Radio Channel 87. You can find him on Twitter at Fancy Sports. He joined us via the BetQL hotline, guest hotline here on the Kevin Sheehan Show. Dentonay sitting in. Yeah, Justin, I'm glad you mentioned quarterbacks. I'm curious, how has it changed when it comes to drafting quarterbacks now that over the past, you know, really 2, 3, 4 years, there's been such a heavy priority on having guys on NFL rosters that have the ability to make plays with their legs?
Oh, and you just said it right there, and that's become the big dividing line. Who do you want to invest in, these quarterbacks that are running all over the place or the pocket passers, which has the higher ceiling? And that's going to be the ones that can run. That's why the draft price for guys like Jalen Hurts, Lamar Jackson, for instance, Anthony Richardson, as we'll see regarding he can stay healthy in the coming years as well, as that will continue to rise up. That's what makes these quarterbacks so unique, and all those rushing yardage advances that you can get and have that advantage over the pocket passers, it adds another dimension and a little bit of a higher ceiling when it comes to those quarterbacks. But then you have to pay for those quarterbacks if you want. That's why for someone like me, even though I want quarterbacks that can run. I've had Jalen Hurts and Lamar Jackson before. I'm not out on those pocket passers that you can now get at good and better values because they're being moved down the draft boards a little bit in the last couple of years.
Where do you think guys like Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels are going to fall in a lot of the upcoming drafts this year ahead of the start of the season?
In 12-team leagues, I'm seeing them over the last few weeks in these very competitive leagues. I'm seeing Caleb Williams go in that 10th round area here. With Jaden Daniels, he's going right there in that 9th to 10th round area. So they're both being drafted pretty close together overall. I would say there's about a maybe 12 pick, maybe 8 to 10 pick difference between the two guys. So they're both right around that 10th round mark. So again, good value right there, especially Daniels with his legs too, and you're getting him in the double digit round. So that's the advantage of going after a rookie, but also it has its disadvantages as well, because if they can't really accustom themselves to the league very quickly, then it's going to be a few weeks until you're getting their ceiling production.
So I want to ask about a couple of players, but you know, I'm really curious when it comes to the return game. Now that we are getting this new kick return, how is that going to impact the way that you are drafting defense and special teams, knowing that there will be a potential, hopefully, you know, fingers crossed. I'm a fan of the new rule personally, Justin, but it feels like there will be an opportunity for more kick return touchdowns. How are you using that information to draft this offseason?
I'm still dead, and at the end of the day, outside if I can sneak a top defense in late, like for instance, let's just say I wanted to go after the 49ers and I haven't seen them get overdrafted, which you are in a lot of snake drafts going to see them get overdrafted, then I'll take my opportunity. If not, I'll just try to get one of the projected top 12 defenses or even top 10 defenses, even if it's 7, 8, or 9. That's kind of how I've been. Even with the new rules in place, I don't give myself any kind of pressure to overdraft a kicker or a defense. And what's funny, Denton, in a lot of the leagues I play in, they don't even have kickers or defenses anymore. We just have an extra flex spot on offense.
Isn't that fascinating, the way that just kind of almost matriculated itself out of fantasy football? Like, all right, these don't really make an impact here. Go get another wide receiver. Go get another running back.
Absolutely, because you have those weeks where your Justin Tuckers of the world or your top defenses are getting you 30 points, and that makes a difference in the game. So I feel like people feel like from a fairness standpoint, they want to bring it in and bring it back to the position players and adding that extra flex spot like I did in my league. I don't love playing with kickers and defense, but I still acknowledge it, especially, and for those playing IDPs as well, which adds another layer to fantasy football. So kickers and defenses aren't out, but then out of all my leagues, I'd say I'm in more leagues that don't have kickers and defenses anymore.
All right, Justin, so I want to get your feel on a couple of players. A lot of these, of course, are going to be wide receivers. You know, a lot of our listeners are involved in either full-point PPRs or half-point PPRs. For a long time, Justin Jefferson has been at the top of a lot of draft boards. Kirk Cousins is gone. J.J. McCarthy and or Sam Darnold is going to be his quarterback. What's your feel on J.J. this year?
So I'm seeing him right now go right in the middle of that first round. I am a little bit worried, but I do want to give him the benefit of the doubt, being as athletic as he is, that will overcome any of the potential accuracy issues that Sam Darnold might have and J.J. McCarthy, no matter what the decision that they make is. But then that's the problem for me. Am I going to spend a top five pick on a proven receiver, hopefully that could stay healthy, dealt with an injury issue last year, but hopefully that could stay healthy, so there's that. But also not knowing who's going to be throwing him the ball throughout the season, and Sam Darnold's not that accurate, it kind of turns me off to him. So for the most part, I'm out on Justin Jefferson at cost, unless he starts dropping down to the end of the first, early second round area, which I don't see happening.
What about a player or two players like a CeeDee Lamb or Brandon Ayuk, where we know we'll be throwing them the football, but as it stands right now, they haven't been doing a lot of practicing with that quarterback this year due to holdouts?
Yeah, it's very tough, and I've been out on Ayuk ever since the trade request, and that's because, again, we don't know where he's going to be. Is he going to end up in no man's land, like in Carolina, for instance? We don't know at that point. So at cost, you're starting to see him drop a little bit. he's going there just inside the top 30. So if he starts dropping to the fourth round, then I can take a little bit of a risk on him. Still a skilled receiver. I have not yet. When it comes to CeeDee Lamb, I invested in him before the contract wavelengths were different between him and the Cowboys and all that started. So I'm already invested in. I'm thinking a deal is going to get done because of how awesome he is. But yeah, do you want to draft this guy number one overall at this point? No, I'm not doing that.
Would it be safe to say that Tyreek Hill is going to be the first wide receiver taken in a lot of drafts this year?
I would say before CeeDee Lamb and that whole situation, no. Now I'm starting to feel like he is, because you can look at CeeDee Lamb, you can look at Hill. You can also look at Ja'Marr Chase. You have an argument for all three wide receivers. So as of this moment now, because of the Lamb conversation that we just brought up, I'd have to say you're going to be seeing more Tyreek Hill. That whole situation in Dallas gets resolved, CeeDee Lamb is going to be taken far more early on than Tyreek Hill when it comes to who you're prioritizing.
Justin, I like to think of myself as a glass half full kind of guy, but every now and then I am a glass half empty. So we've talked a lot about wide receivers. Is there anyone that you're staying away from, saying, outside of Brandon Ayuk, which you gave me, but is there anyone where you look at and say, a lot of people are high on him, I'm not?
So here's one I'm staying away from, and that's Marvin Harrison Jr., a very good talent and someone who could be in the conversation in the next few years for a top overall pick. This year, though, considering he's going just outside the first round, and if you're in 14-team league, you're going to have to pay a first-round pick potentially for Marvin Harrison Jr. I just don't want to pay that cost right now. Some trust issues I have with Kyler Murray, health issues also attached to him too. So I'm kind of in a wait-and-see mode, and when I play DFS, yes, when I invest in him from a wagering standpoint early on, if I see low props, absolutely. From a season-long standpoint for a first-round pick, I'm excited to watch him, but I'm going to be sitting there with my popcorn, and I'm not going to be drafting him in the first round.
Who would you take at your quarterback? Let's just say you drafted two good wide receivers. You're in round number three, and just about everybody is still on the board. Who's your first pick at quarterback in a new league?
I mean, I would have to say it would probably end up being Josh Allen for me still, because of what he could do with his legs as well. Hurts would be right there, but probably Josh Allen for me. Although, I'll say this, Den, I'm not going to be someone that has Josh Allen, because, again, I love that 6th to 10th round area of quarterbacks that are going. So if it were everybody on the board and I was feeling it, Josh Allen would be my guy. I find myself, though, picking most of my quarterbacks outside of Superflex leagues in that 6th round area through 10th.
Justin Fensterman here with us, FantasyGuru.com, SiriusXM Fantasy Sports, Channel 87. You can find him on Twitter, at Fancy Sports. Justin, what's the current value of running backs nowadays in fantasy football?
So it's interesting because there's a drop-off because we don't have as many three-down solidified backs anymore. We're talking about more split backfields. So you have your top guys like Christian McCaffrey has been going number one. Everybody excited about Bijan Robinson and Breece Hall. But then after that, you got Jonathan Taylor hanging in there. Then there's a lot of questions after that. So I feel like, Denton, in the last year or two, wide receivers are starting to be more accepted as first-round, second-round picks. I feel like there were so many years in the 2010s where it was you have to draft three stud running backs in your first four or five rounds. That pressure is not there anymore. So we're seeing wide receivers go early. So besides those first few that I mentioned, you might be able to get some of the stud running backs, even like a Derrick Henry, let's just say, or a Pacheco in the third round because of that.
How superstitious are you when it comes to your drafting habits? Like, are you going to bars? Do you have a setup at your home? Like, where are you when it comes to superstition as it relates to drafting?
So when I'm in a snake draft, first of all, I love drafting from home. Drafts and auctions, I prefer to just be in my own ozone at that point, focusing completely. But if I'm in a snake draft, what I'll do to kind of keep the juices flowing and my mind racing a little bit, I'll listen to Blink 182's Enema of the State album, which is, in my opinion, one of the greatest albums of all time, front to back, start to finish, and that normally keeps my mind flowing at a very nice level. So that's a normal routine right there when I'm in snake drafts.
What's the worst punishment that you have either had to fulfill or that has ever been associated with a league that you are in?
All right, so I won't say the name, but someone who we have worked with, because we have worked together in Radio Galaxies Far, Far Away before Denton. So someone we worked with came in last place in their league, and they had to go take the SATs. And they actually, this person actually went to a high school, registered, and took the SATs, and the proxies were so mad at him, because here you have these juniors and seniors who are freaking out about their futures, and this guy, probably at this point in his late 20s, maybe early 30s, comes rolling in, doesn't care, but has to take the test.
did he at least get a reputable score? Like, did you even care about the score at that point?
So, I mean, I want to know all the details, then, because of what we do. We're always looking for all the info. So I want to know the score. I'll have to ask this person again, but I wish I knew that score. To me, that's the worst punishment, especially if the SATs nowadays, they're multiple days. So that's 2 days worth of time that you have to waste on a test that means nothing to you.
I'd rather sit in Waffle House for 24 hours. If you're giving me 2 days of the SATs, hated them when I was in high school, don't like them anymore now, I just sit in Waffle House and shove waffles in my mouth to try and get out of it.
Yeah, with the smothered and covered hash browns, of course. That's my favorite combo at Waffle House.
Justin, greatly appreciate it, my friend. Always good to hear from you. Let's do it again soon, all right?
Thank you so much for having me, Denton.
That is Justin Fensterman, fantasyguru.com, and you can hear him on SiriusXM Fantasy Sports. Find him on Twitter at Fancy Sports. He was good enough to join us via our BetQL guest hotline. Any sort of fantasy football coverage that we have is presented by T-Mobile. You can switch to T-Mobile, and you get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. The idea and the concept, Chris, of a punishment of going to a high school and taking the SAT literally gives me nightmares. I took it twice when I was in high school, the first of which I went to Westfield High School in Fairfax, Virginia, which not that far away from where I lived at the time. However, very, very different from the high school that I went to. I went to Freedom High School in South Riding, and something about a lot of the Loudoun County high schools is that they are basically all designed the same. So you understand where this, like, I'm in room 203. I know exactly where 203 is. I know if I'm upstairs. I know if I'm downstairs. I went to Westfield High School, and I don't know if this is school pride or just someone needing to get punched in the nuts. It's designed like a W for Westfield. I don't know what that means. So they're like, yeah, you want to go to W 32-6. And I'm like, I see a 12 here. Like, what does this mean? I got lost taking the SAT. And it's the reason why I didn't do good on it. Not because I'm dumb. It's because I got lost in high school. It's a fact.
My SAT experience was a little different. I got caught smoking during my SAT experience in the break between like two of the sessions. But I was 18, so like they couldn't like really do anything, and it wasn't like a school day.
Right.
It was like real weird, and they told like my principal, and then she called me in like the next like Monday or whatever, because I was at my own school where I took it. Now, they did them at different ones around the county, but coincidentally, the day I had signed up, they were doing it at my school.
That's the way to do it, but my second one was at my actual high school.
It was like all in the cafeteria or whatever. We were all in the cafeteria.
Oh, they made us go to classrooms, but, so we didn't cheat, and they gave us Rice Krispies.
Oh, they were all walking around making sure we didn't cheat and stuff, but yeah, I went outside and smoked a cigarette behind the stairs, and some teacher came out and yelled at me and the dude I was with, who's a friend of mine too, and we got in trouble for that. But then like the principal like couldn't do anything. She's like, well, it wasn't like school hours, and you know, like it wasn't like during school, and I was 18, so it wasn't like,
right,
you know, whatever.
Anyway, I can't imagine walking into an SAT now and taking it.
Time too.
Well, I'd also be really upset, like if I did do that at 29 years old, having no study. First of all, people would look like I'm nuts. I'm bald, I have a beard, and I'm walking into a high school with a bunch of juniors. They'd arrest me on the spot. However, it would hurt my feelings a little bit if at 29 years old, not caring about anything scholastic for the past 10 years, if I were to walk into an SAT and get a better score now than when my parents put me through like study sessions and all these notebooks and after school things. It would hurt my feelings. They probably wouldn't be that happy with me either.
I did very little studying for my. I actually forgot the day it was. I'd been hanging out with, like, my friends and stuff, like, the night before. My mom woke me up, and she was like, hey, you got to go do your SATs. And I was like, oh, man, what? And she was, like, dragging me out of bed. I was like, fine. So I go and do this thing, man. And I still scored better than my buddy who lived, like, five houses down that took the Princeton review.
Honestly, you probably scored better than I did. Mine was, like, criminal. It wasn't, like,
insanely good on the English for some reason. I only got a couple points off on that. But then my math was, like, pretty wonky because, like, you have to, like, practice. I'm like, what's that formula? I know I did that, like, a year ago in this class. You know, it's like.
I bet my English. My English would be silly now because I'm actually a pretty decent writer. My math would be awful. All right, coming up.
We all have calculators on our phones. And even if you had a complex question, you can put that into Google. It'll just tell you.
Right. You know, exactly. Like, I'm sure they take really your phone away.
I don't even remember how to do long-form division anymore because I don't ever have to do it, you know?
Yeah, me neither. Long-form division makes me cringe. All right, coming up next, the NFL Network is giving their top 100 players. Who is the highest commander, and is there a snub? The answer to that question is yes. I'll tell you who it is when we get back. It's Kevin Sheehan Show, Denton Day, sitting in for Kevin on the Team 980, theteam980.com, and always free and live on the Odyssey app. It's Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980, team980.com, free Odyssey app. Denton Day sitting in for Kevin. You can tweet me at the Denton Day. Our phone lines are open for the remainder of the show at 301-230-0980. Our guy Ross in Tampa wants to jump in quickly before we get to the NFL top 100 list, talking about an SAT story. Ross, what's up, man?
Hey, what's you doing, bro?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm good, man. It's good to actually talk to you in the field as opposed to in the bullpen. So, yeah. I'll make it nice and quick, man. Y'all talking fantasy. Well, real quick, it was like one of those punishments where everybody in my league lived in the WNBA market back in like 2016. And the punishment was you had to take somebody to a game, leave your phone in the car, and then the person who went with you had to take a picture to confirm you were there. And the guy who lost, he did not have a good time at all, man. I think he was he was with the Dream, so he lived in Atlanta, so he was at that game. But also, I remember drafting, and I'm leaving the hospital with my then newborn son, and I'm like, oh shit, I got a draft, and I have my wife and my son in the back seat, and I'm like on 275, which is basically your guys is 295, and I'm like over here freaking out, trying to make sure I didn't miss my draft picks, because I treat my draft boards the way Adam Peters treats his draft boards. I'm like super serious. I'm always tweeting Paul Charchian every single week. But I also wanted to touch on a couple of things that you mentioned earlier in the show, then I'll hop off. When you were talking about all the yes that the Redskins got over the years, man, I went to Ball State University in Indiana, and that's the home of Ryan Kerrigan. He's from that town.
Yeah.
And I'm hanging out with my Redskins stuff on, and his sister ran up on me. And she was telling me a story about, like, yo, she went up, forgot the wife's name, Snyder's wife, not the current wife, but
Tanya.
Snyder's wife. Whatever. Tanya. She was like, hey, this, that, or whatever, these things are messed up. Are you guys planning on fixing these? And she's like, oh, no, we're going to get a new stadium in a few years. We're not going to fix anything. Because why fix the stadium when we're going to get a new one? So that kind of goes to justify the grade that these guys have been getting all these years. And last one, man, as far as kickoff return, I'd like to see what Chris Rodriguez can do back there. I think he's like a fast, powerful, former SEC athlete who could really like make something of that opportunity, because I'm not sure how deep he is and the offensive pecking order right now. But yeah. What say you, man?
I love that you brought up Chris Rodriguez, Ross. I appreciate the call, because he is one of those guys that is going to make or break his spot on the roster based off of whether or not he can play kick return. And you mentioned him as a returner, which I think is a very viable option. On top of that, he can block. So, like, I mentioned wide receivers, tight ends, linebackers, running backs, specifically with the stature of Chris Rodriguez, who are not afraid to get their nose dirty, get a little bit of contact, and seal the edge and throw their body at somebody, they're going to be crucial. Because as we saw yesterday in the Hall of Fame game, the DBs aren't blockers. They're great for when you are the kicking team. You can go down, race down, bring somebody down, but they're not ones that are great when it comes to squaring up, let me put a hat on a hat, and give somebody some space. That's just not what they're good at. It's not fair to ask them that. They're so used to doing it the other way around. Whereas running backs, and Chris Rodriguez is, again, a great example of this, if he's not the one returning the kicks, you could put him on that line, and he's a dude that'll go and give you a little bit of space if you are Byron Pringle or whoever, right? So if it's not Rodriguez returning, I do think he can make the roster by being a huge guy when it comes to the blocking of the kick returns and getting the opportunity for somebody to break one loose. That's a really good point that you brought up there, Ross. I appreciate it. It's Kevin Sheehan show on the Team 980 Denton Day, sitting in for Kevin here on a Friday. We have not talked a ton about the NFL's top 100. They are doing one this year. It doesn't feel like this year they have been promoting it nearly as much as in years past, but it kind of does feel like the Hall of Fame game really snuck up on you. Maybe that's just me, but it feels like the Hall of Fame game really snuck up on us. But they are doing the top 100 list, and there are three commanders that have made the list so far. I say so far because who knows, maybe there's the potential of a fourth one. Now, I should say they've done 90 players so far. So everybody else is a top 10 player in this league, unless there are a lot of guys that really love Sam Cosmi. Sam Cosmi's not going to be on this list. There's only going to be three commanders. Cosmi is a snub. He needs to be on the list, but I do understand that this is a list put together by skill position guys, and they're not given a lot of love to guards. Offensive linemen in general, outside of tackles, specifically left tackles, not getting a lot of love on this kind of list. That just kind of comes with the territory. With that said, do I believe that Sam Cosmi is a top 100 player in the NFL? Of course I do. Of course I do. But he's just not getting the love. So he was not on the list. But there were three that were. Terry McLaurin came in at number 97. It's very, very low, but I'm glad that he made the top 100 list. The way that people have been talking about him this offseason kind of had this weird feeling, maybe he's not going to be on the list. You know, he was left out of a lot of the wide receiver lists that were put on by the scouts and the GMs and the executives. But when it came to the players, Terry McLaurin did make the list. So I was glad to see Terry McLaurin on it, even if it was as low as 97. Bobby Wagner came in at 59. Really, Bobby Wagner counts as like half. Because, yeah, he technically is a commander, but he's not on this list for what he's done as a commander. He was on this list for his performance last year. He's just now currently signed to the commander. So he does count, but it's like kind of a weird way of counting him, right? But he is on the list. For Bobby Wagner, it says, I'll read Terry McLaurin's description in just a second, but for Bobby Wagner, it says, for Wagner, 2023 marked a return to his first NFL home in Seattle, and with it, a return to vintage Wagner. Side note, sign me up for some vintage Bobby Wagner this year, please and thank you. It continues. He made his ninth Pro Bowl and led the NFL in tackles, 183. Hot damn, that's a lot of tackles. For the third time as a pro, extending his career-long streak of years with 100-plus tackles. Wagner doesn't look to be slowing down even after a dozen seasons, and he'll look to bring that playmaking ability and veteran experience to Washington. Sign me up for everything that I just read coming here to Washington. This dude is a for sure gold jacketer. We're going to be talking about him in years to come on the Hall of Fame game. He's going to go in as a Seahawk, but still, we're going to count him. He's going to be in the Hall of Fame. The guy is awesome. I'm glad he's on this list. I hope we get that vintage Bobby Wagner. I completely skipped over reading about Terry McLaurin. So this is what Terry McLaurin was listed at on NFL.com as it relates to this countdown. Again, he was at 97. McLaurin has played with 10 different starting QBs since entering the league in 2019. Trust me, we know. But he still finds ways to produce. Case in point, McLaurin can become the first player to post five straight seasons of 1,000-plus receiving yards, with each coming from a different primary starting quarterback. Heading into training camp around the NFL's Kevin Parcher ranked McLaurin's connection with rookie Jayden Daniels as the fifth-best rookie-to-veteran duo. I'm going to hope that means ever and not just this year, because if he's the fifth best this year, that's not very good.
Starting the first game?
Yeah, that is not good. I would not have added that tidbit. That better be like the fifth best rookie to receiver ever. Like Caleb Williams, unless you're counting Caleb Williams' connection to all three of the starting quarterbacks there. And then that felt like a very big slap to the face at the end of that one. Oh, it's the fifth best among the six rookie quarterbacks that were drafted. That's all. Like, Drake May isn't even playing. That's terrible. That's very disrespectful to end that. I don't like that at all. So McLaurin was at 97, and the highest ranked Washington Commander on this list is John Allen at 54. So no Daron Payne. No Daron Payne on this list. John Allen at 54. And it says, Allen earned his third consecutive appearance on this list after recording 5.5 sacks and 19 QB hits, bringing his career total for the former up to 39. Though that's a bit of a down year for him, he's also valued by his team and fellow players for his leadership and intangibles, evidenced by seventh-year vet being retained by Dan Quinn to help lead the Commanders into a new era while other pieces were parted with. Basically, they like him more than they like Chase Young and Montez Sweat, is what that said at the very end there. I'm a little stunned. I thought John Allen would be a little further down this list. This year compared to 2 years ago, I felt it was a big, big down year. Like, the numbers suggested it was a down year. Even just watching him, it felt like he had less of a presence than he had in 2 years ago, right? So I was stunned that John Allen was the highest-ranked commander on this list at number 54. And again, I'm bummed that Sam Cosmi is not on this list. It bothers me that Sam Cosmi is getting zero love this offseason in anything. I mean, I don't care if it's Madden rankings. I don't care if it's an ESPN list of guards. Like, Sam Cosmi is getting snubbed in a bunch of different directions. I don't know that he cares. In fact, I would go so far as to say he does not care about these sorts of things. He doesn't strike me as that kind of individual. But I do hope this kind of lights a fuel under him a little bit. I also hope the team resigns him. I don't care to go through the Brandon Scherff thing again. Really like Sam Cosmi. He needs to be here for the foreseeable future. He is the kind of guy that you want to build an offensive unit, an offensive line around. He needs to be here for the foreseeable future. But I was a little upset with him not being on this list. Again, maybe he gets into the top 10. Wouldn't consider it likely, because they're not putting a guard in the top 10 players. It's got to be like your Mahomes, your Tyreek Hills, your Travis Kelce's. I mean, they did 20-11 earlier this week. And listen to some of these names. It's, you got Stroud at 20. You got Roquan Smith at 19. You got Justin Jefferson at 18. Micah Parsons at 17. Gross. Dak Prescott at 16. Gross. Jalen Hurts at 15. Gross. You got George Kittle at 14, CeeDee Lamb at 13, yuck. You got Josh Allen at 12, and then Fred Warner at 11. Would not say that Sam Cosmi is going to rank above some of those guys, but I do think he should have been on this list. And that leads me to my question. We're getting optimistic. We're looking to next year, and the phone lines are open. 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. You can tweet me as well, at the Denton Day. Who on the Commanders is going to be the highest-ranked player on this list next year? Terry, John, Sam Cosmi. There's a slew of guys. Maybe you're confident Jane Daniels going to ball out. I mean, C.J. Stroud went from rookie to 20 on this list. So my question to you, who is going to be the highest-ranked commander on this list when we're sitting here in 2025 discussing it? 301-230-0980. I'll give you my answer when we get back. It's a Kevin Sheehan show. Denton Day sitting in for Kevin here on the Team 980, theteam980.com, and always on the Live and Free Odyssey app. Ben Sandy going to join us at the top of the hour, 12 noon. He was at camp today. Get his thoughts on what they did. They worked on a couple of endgame scenarios. And Dan Quinn said something interesting that I'll play for you in that third hour that leads me to believe he is not going to screw things up the way that Ron Rivera screwed things up in some of those late game scenarios down towards the goal line on both the offense and defense. Our conversation right now, and the phone line's open at 301-230-0980. The NFL isn't going to finish their top 100 list today. There are three commanders on it. You got Terry McLaurin at 97, you got Bobby Wagner at 59, you got John Allen at 54. My question for you on the phones is, who is going to be the highest ranked commander next year? Bonus points if you can give me how many commanders. Maybe you think Sam Cosmi or Daron Payne, Jane Daniels, whoever. Maybe you think somebody else joins them on this list. Your call is at 301-230-0980. You can tweet me as well at the Denton Day? The answer for me is not obvious, but it feels obvious. It's not Jaden Daniels, although I am hopeful that Jaden Daniels this time next year is on the list. However, I don't think he will be the highest on the list. The highest on the list is going to be Terry McLaurin. It will not be this 97 thing anymore. Terry McLaurin is going to have a top 50 caliber a year next year on this NFL top 100 list because he finally has a quarterback that is good. Like, really, really good. With the potential of being great and, like, franchise-alteringly great. Just the ability to have the consistency. A guy that he's already starting to form a good connection with. Now, we kind of had like a good connection with Sam Howell. Yeah, whatever. But Jaden Daniels feels much more ready for the NFL coming out of college than Sam Howell was coming off of his rookie year where he played one game at the end of the year. I'm more confident in what Jaden Daniels is going to bring to the offense and in turn what Terry McLaurin is going to get in terms of production. There are not going to be games with Jaden Daniels where Terry McLaurin is not going to catch a football like there were last year. There are not going to be weeks, stretches of time where we are sitting with our hands thrown up in the air, our Twitter fingers ravaging across X saying, why is Terry not getting the football? Why is he not involved in the offense? That is not going to happen this year. With Cliff Kingsbury and with Jaden Daniels, Terry McLaurin is going to put forth a year of production that those of us that know him and have been around him since he got drafted, that have been fans of him since he got drafted, we know what he's capable of. We have seen it. There have been moments where you're like, this dude, if he just had a quarterback, would be a freak. And gone are the days of 10 quarterbacks in 5 years. Nuh-uh. No more. So Terry McLaurin is going to be, he is going to have at least a top 50 landing spot on this list next year. And I think he's going to be the highest commander on this list next year. If he's not the highest commander and he's still top 50, life is great for those of us that are fans of the team. And I'm hoping for that. But Terry is going to have a top 50 year next year as it relates to this list. We're taking your calls, 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. You can hit me up on Twitter as well, at The Denton Day. Who is going to be the highest ranked commander on next year's NFL Top 100 list? Ben Standy going to join us at the top of the hour. Let's go to Mitch in New Jersey. Mitch, what's going on? Yeah. Mitch, are you there?
Hello? Oh, caught. My mistake. How you doing, Dan? Good show.
Appreciate it.
I'm going to give you. I don't think these guys be in the top 10, but you guys say be in the top 50. We have a great set of running backs, three deep. It's going to be unfair that Chris Rodriguez won't get that many touches, but Eckler and Robinson, they got to be in the top 50 by next year, if not this year. Thank you for taking my call and putting up with me.
I appreciate it, Mitch. I mean, if one of the running backs gets in to the NFL top 100 list, I would feel more comfortable saying it's going to be Brian Robinson, and I'm taking that approach because I think Brian Robinson is going to get the bulk of the carries this year. You know, Austin Eckler gives this team a dynamic that they had a little bit with Antonio Gibson, but started to like weirdly shy away from it towards the end of Gibby's run here. That third down receiving threat. But Brian Robinson, to his credit, while he hasn't become the runner that I was hoping he would be when he was drafted, and there are plenty of reasons well documented that has taken a little bit of time, he really did a good job becoming a guy that could be a threat out of the backfield in the receiving game. And we saw that against that game in Seattle, right, where Hal finds him on the touchdown and they do basically the exact same play, and he gets like another 50 yards. Brian Robinson has done a real lot of good work on being that threat. So if there is a running back that's going to get onto this list next year at all, I'm much more confident in that guy being Brian Robinson. Now, if Austin Eckler is the guy, that's totally cool too. But I just think that Brian Robinson is going to have much more of an impact in what the offense does on a possession-by-possession basis, where Austin Eckler, to me, feels like he's going to be more of that spot guy, where if you want to put two running backs on the field, you're putting Brian Robinson and Austin Eckler. If Brian Robinson needs a breather, you're putting in Austin Eckler. But I do feel like Brian Robinson is transitioning to the point where he can be a three-down back. Not a third down back, but a three down back. Now, that is a lot easier said than done, and we'll see what this Cliff Kingsbury offense looks like with him in it. But I am confident in Brian Robinson being a guy that can carry the bulk of the load offensively and do really good with that. I also have a feeling that on the defensive side, Frankie Louvu is going to be on this list. We spoke a lot about Frankie Louvu this year. A lot of people are very excited about Frankie Louvu this year, as they should be. He's going to be a guy that's put in a couple of different positions, but he's really going to be a guy that gets after the quarterback. He's putting a little bit of pressure on Jamin Davis, because he is kind of what it feels like what Ron wanted Jamin to be and then never actually turned Jamin into, which is a guy that can do a bunch of different things. But the way that he fits into this Dan Quinn and Joe Witt defense, there's a reason that Frankie Louvu got a contract when everyone and their mother this offseason in town was getting a one-year deal. There's a reason that guy got a three-year deal. There's a lot of confidence with him and expectations for what he can end up becoming this year on the defense. So I think Frankie Louvu is going to find his way onto the NFL top 100 list as well. There's a real good potential that he leads the team in sacks. And I'm thinking potentially double-digit sacks. Like, we're first-time double-digit sacks since, like, Kerrigan did it. Riders and Duron. Like, it's going to be it's been a very long time. Montez and Chase never did it. It's been a very long time since an edge rusher got double-digit sacks here. If I'm putting my money on anybody, it's going to be Frankie Louvu to be the one that breaks that streak. So he's one of those guys that I'm looking at and saying he might end up being on this list as well if he really balls out the way that a lot of us hope he can. And playing alongside Bobby Wagner, you know, I read the description for Bobby Wagner. Last year he led the NFL in tackles with 183. He was vintage Bobby Wagner. The ability that he's going to give Frankie Louvu to play a little more free, and really just everybody on the defense to play a little more free, knowing that you have a guy that can be the anchor of the defense, that can call the plays, be the captain on the defensive side. I'm excited to see what the defense is going to look like in terms of communication and free-flowing. Because for the final 3 years of the Jack Del Rio experience, it was the exact opposite. There was no communication. Everyone was stiff. No free-flowing, and oh my God, Cooper Kupp is wide open with no defender within 20 yards of him. Like, how you let him wide open? I don't know. And you're doing it the ending portion of the season, right? Like, the way that defense operated under Jack Del Rio was so aggravating, it's part of the reason that I don't have hair on the top of my head anymore. Not the entire reason, but like part of the reason, because I was constantly pulling it out. And I'm sitting there with Linnell doing the in-game show, and we're fighting every urge that we have in our body to not just start swearing and get us kicked off the air due to the FCC. That will not happen this year. I am confident of one thing on defense, and it's that will not be our reality. So I'm excited about Bobby Wagner, what he brings, and man, I'm telling you, Frankie Louvu is in for a season that's going to land him on the top 100 by NFL Network next year. All right, hour two in the books coming up at the top, as we do each and every Friday. Ben Sandig going to join us from camp. They practiced some late game scenarios. I'm excited to see and hear what Ben thought of some of those scenarios, as well as the new kickoff rule. That, when we get back, it's Kevin Sheehan Show, Denton Day, sitting in for Kevin on the Team 980, the Team980.com, and the free and live Odyssey app. Ben Sandig going to join us at the top of the hour, 12 noon. He was at camp today. Get his thoughts on what they did. They worked on a couple of endgame scenarios, and Dan Quinn said something interesting that I'll play for you in that third hour that leads me to believe he is not going to screw things up the way that Ron Rivera screwed things up in some of those late game scenarios down towards the goal line on both the offense and defense. Our conversation right now, and the phone lines open at 301-230-0980. The NFL isn't going to finish their top 100 list today. There are three commanders on it. You got Terry McLaurin at 97. You got Bobby Wagner at 59. You got John Allen at 54. My question for you on the phones is, who is going to be the highest ranked commander next year. Bonus points if you can give me how many Commanders. Maybe you think Sam Cosmi or Daron Payne, Jaden Daniels, whoever. Maybe you think somebody else joins them on this list. Your calls at 301-230-0980. You can tweet me as well at the Denton Day. The answer for me is not obvious, but it feels obvious. It's not Jaden Daniels, although I am hopeful that Jaden Daniels this time next year is on the list. However, I don't think he will be the highest on the list. The highest on the list is going to be Terry McLaurin. It will not be this 97 thing anymore. Terry McLaurin is going to have a top 50 caliber a year next year on this NFL top 100 list because he finally has a quarterback that is good. Like, really, really good. With the potential of being great and, like, franchise-alteringly great. Just the ability to have the consistency. A guy that he's already starting to form a good connection with. Now, we kind of had, like, a good connection with Sam Howell. Yeah, whatever. But Jaden Daniels feels much more ready for the NFL coming out of college than Sam Howell was coming off of his rookie year where he played one game. At the end of the year, I'm more confident in what Jaden Daniels is going to bring to the offense and in turn what Terry McLaurin is going to get in terms of production. There are not going to be games with Jaden Daniels where Terry McLaurin is not going to catch a football like there were last year. There are not going to be weeks, stretches of time where we are sitting with our hands thrown up in the air, our Twitter fingers ravaging across X, saying, why is Terry not getting the football? Why is he not involved in the offense? That is not going to happen this year. With Cliff Kingsbury and with Jaden Daniels, Terry McLaurin is going to put forth a year of production that those of us that know him and have been around him since he got drafted, have been fans of him since he got drafted, we know what he's capable of. We have seen it. There have been moments where you're like, this dude, if he just had a quarterback, would be a freak. And gone are the days of 10 quarterbacks in 5 years. Nuh-uh. No more. So Terry McLaurin is going to be, he is going to have at least a top 50 landing spot on this list next year. And I think he's going to be the highest Commander on this list next year. If he's not the highest Commander and he's still top 50, life is great for those of us that are fans of the team. And I'm hoping for that. But Terry is going to have a top 50 year next year as it relates to this list. We're taking your calls, 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. You can hit me up on Twitter as well, at The Denton Day. Who is going to be the highest ranked Commander on next year's NFL Top 100 list? Ben Standy going to join us at the top of the hour. Let's go to Mitch in New Jersey. Mitch, what's going on? Mitch, are you there?
Hello? Oh, caught my mistake. How you doing, Dan? Good show.
Appreciate it.
I'm going to give you. I don't think these guys be in the top 10, but you guys say you'd be in the top 50. We have a great set of running backs, three deep. It's going to be unfair that Chris Rodriguez won't get that many touches, but Austin Eckler and Robinson, they got to be in the top 50 by next year, not this year. Thank you for taking my call and putting up with me.
I appreciate it, Mitch. I mean, if one of the running backs gets in to the NFL top 100 list, I would feel more comfortable saying it's going to be Brian Robinson, and I'm taking that approach because I think Brian Robinson is going to get the bulk of the carries this year. You know, Austin Eckler gives this team a dynamic that they had a little bit with Antonio Gibson, but started to like weirdly shy away from it towards the end of Gibby's run here. That third down receiving threat. But Brian Robinson, to his credit, while he hasn't become the runner that I was hoping he would be when he was drafted, and there are plenty of reasons well documented that has taken a little bit of time, he really did a good job becoming a guy that could be a threat out of the backfield in the receiving game. And we saw that against that game in Seattle, right, where Hal finds him on the touchdown and they do basically the exact same play, and he gets like another 50 yards. Brian Robinson has done a real lot of good work on being that threat. So if there is a running back that's going to get onto this list next year at all, I'm much more confident in that guy being Brian Robinson. Now, if Austin Ekeler is the guy, that's totally cool too. But I just think that Brian Robinson is going to have much more of an impact in what the offense does on a possession-by-possession basis, where Austin Ekeler to me feels like he's going to be more of that spot guy, where if you want to put two running backs on the field, you're putting Brian Robinson and Austin Ekeler. If Brian Robinson needs a breather, you're putting in Austin Ekeler. But I do feel like Brian Robinson is transitioning to the point where he can be a three-down back. Not a third down back, but a three down back. Now, that is a lot easier said than done, and we'll see what this Cliff Kingsbury offense looks like with him in it. But I am confident in Brian Robinson being a guy that can carry the bulk of the load offensively and do really good with that. I also have a feeling that on the defensive side, Frankie Louvu is going to be on this list. We spoke a lot about Frankie Louvu this year. A lot of people are very excited about Frankie Louvu this year, as they should be. He's going to be a guy that's put in a couple of different positions, but he's really going to be a guy that gets after the quarterback. He's putting a little bit of pressure on Jamin Davis because he is kind of what it feels like what Ron wanted Jamin to be and then never actually turned Jamin into, which is a guy that can do a bunch of different things. But the way that he fits into this Dan Quinn and Joe Witt defense, there's a reason that Frankie Louvu got a contract when everyone and their mother this offseason in town was getting a one-year deal. There's a reason that guy got a three-year deal. There's a lot of confidence with him and expectations for what he can end up becoming this year on the defense. So I think Frankie Louvu is going to find his way onto the NFL top 100 list as well. There's a real good potential that he leads the team in sacks. And I'm thinking potentially double-digit sacks. Like, we're first-time double-digit sacks since, like, Kerrigan did it. Riders and Duron. Like, it's going to be it's been a very long time. Montez and Chase never did it. It's been a very long time since an edge rusher got double-digit sacks here. If I'm putting my money on anybody, it's going to be Frankie Louvu to be the one that breaks that streak. So he's one of those guys that I'm looking at and saying he might end up being on this list as well if he really balls out the way that a lot of us hope he can. And playing alongside Bobby Wagner, you know, I read the description for Bobby Wagner. Last year he led the NFL in tackles with 183. He was vintage Bobby Wagner. The ability that he's going to give Frankie Louvu to play a little more free, and really just everybody on the defense to play a little more free, knowing that you have a guy that can be the anchor of the defense, that can call the plays, be the captain on the defensive side. I'm excited to see what the defense is going to look like in terms of communication and free-flowing. Because for the final 3 years of the Jack Del Rio experience, it was the exact opposite. There was no communication. Everyone was stiff. No free flowing, and oh my God, Cooper Kupp is wide open with no defender within 20 yards of him. Like, how you let him wide open? I don't know. And you're doing it the ending portion of the season, right? Like, the way that defense operated under Jack Del Rio was so aggravating. It's part of the reason that I don't have hair on the top of my head anymore. Not the entire reason, but like part of the reason, because I was constantly pulling it out. And I'm sitting there with Linnell doing the in-game show, and we're fighting every urge that we have in our body to not just start swearing and get us kicked off the air due to the FCC. That will not happen this year. I am confident of one thing on defense, and it's that will not be our reality. So I'm excited about Bobby Wagner, what he brings, and man, I'm telling you, Frankie Louvu is in for a season that's going to land him on the top 100 by NFL Network next year. All right, hour two in the books coming up at the top, as we do each and every Friday. Ben Sande going to join us from camp. They practiced some late game scenarios. I'm excited to see and hear what Ben thought of some of those scenarios, as well as the new kickoff rule. That when we get back, it's Kevin Sheehan Show, Denton Day, sitting in for Kevin on the Team 980, the Team980.com, and the free and live Odyssey app.